Good morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. We are here with two of the greatest Quincyans, in my estimation. Now we have to figure out, of the three of us in the room, which are two of the greatest. Ah. Chuck well, Schultz and Jack Freiberg are here.
I'm happy to be here with Mary and Jack, so I am with two great Quincyans.
You are a great Quincy.
Well, just dad, in the amongst them, as Dizzy Dean used to say. Yeah. They ask you if he's great, so I'm amongst them.
Well, you know, Dizzy also said during a rain break, he's kissing her on the strikes, and we won't finish the conversation.
I used to, on Saturday afternoons, Dizzy and Pee Wee Reese, where that was baseball. And, you know, guys our age, Bob Costas is our age, and he recently wrote a column in AARP, so that's really dating him, reading the AARP. But it was about his first baseball game, and I had the same absolute experience. Every baseball game I'd ever seen was in black and white. So when I finally get, my dad's taking me to St. Louis Sportsman Park, I'm like 8 years old or whatever, we're underneath, you know, and when there's that ramp that goes out to the field, you can't believe how green it is. That's I still can see that in my mind all these decades later, and Bob Costas had the same experience, but it was a black and white, you know. You never saw baseball in color.
Well, my dad never saw a television set till he was 12 years old. When you think about it, my dad was the anchor man for NBC here for all those years, but never saw a television set till he was 12. Of course, my dad would be 100 this year. So, but, you know, he went to Sportsman's Park, too. So, you know, but very interesting.
I saw Willie Mays knock a letter off the scoreboard that day.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Great memory, Chuck.
Great memory. And that's what this show is all about, the memories of these two men. Now, Jack Freiberg, we're going to get into the election and we're going to get into the bicentennial because we've got a lot. But Jack has brought a recent item that he found at an auction. He likes to go and collect artifacts from history. You're going someplace interesting next week. You're going to a decoy convention?
Yeah, I'm going to the National Decoy Show at the conference, the Weston Conference Center in Lombard, Illinois. And one of the items in this show of Quincy interest is a cast iron pig circa the 1920s that was a salesman sample that was made by the Mormon Manufacturing Company here. And what they did with that pig is they would take the parts out of the pigs, and these were obviously the meaty parts that they would take out that were all inside of this cast iron pig. And it's the pig, it looks like the standard Hampshire hog that we have that we had around here. And anyway, what they did is they used those to say that if you feed this Mormon feed, that this area of the hog will benefit from that. So you'll see the growth areas in this benefit of the hog. So that your hogs increase their weight quicker and become ready for market a lot quicker based on that.
And that's what Mormon built their whole fortune on.
And was, their sales force was incredible.
Yeah,
for those
you,
that remember the height
you
of
had
Mormons.
A relative?
Yeah, my cousin Tom was a salesman.
Yeah.
You know, they always said the highest paid employee at Mormons was a salesman, just, you know, based on commission was making more maybe than the CEO.
But this pig is up for sale.
This pig is up for sale.
And it could be repurposed as a purse.
Well, I think that's
using
a lot of female ingenuity there personally. But anyway, the pig is, I've seen it before. It was
really?
On a segment of Antique Roadshow.
Ah, yes.
And on that segment of Antique Roadshow where they showed it, they estimated it to be worth $10,000 in value. Now, very few of these come to market. There's very few of them out there. I do understand that Quincy Museum has one after talking to Nancy Benz. But I am not aware of any of them really coming to market until now. There is one for sale on eBay, and the one that's at the Guyette and Dieter auction. That pig currently at the Guyette and Dieter auction. Now this is online only. You know, you don't really have a sale until next week. It'll be a week from today that it goes up for auction. on the Guyot and Dieter, it's item 401B, but it's currently at $4,000.
Well, I have only two things to say. Be sure to pick it up for me. And the other thing I have to say is, does Tom Schultz, does Lisa Mussolino have a pig purse? Has she repurposed? Would you please call Hertz today and ask her?
If
Lisa has a pig purse, if Lisa Mussolino Schultz has repurposed this to a purse, then that proves my theory. That's proof of concept. Well, and then Freiberg, you have to gift this to me.
I'm sure there's a lot of listeners out there that remember going to the Mormon Research Farm kids with the tour.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody that ever ate in the cafeteria out there, they had the little biscuits that were shaped like pigs.
Yeah.
$0.35 for lunch, something like that.
Yeah, it was great.
Anyway, I am sure that if you repurpose this into a purse, that almost anywhere you went, you would cause conversation.
It is true. And we'll take a commercial break later on, and I'll show you another. I just thought of another picture on my phone. Somebody that lives in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, was at a museum there, and the case that the artifacts were in was made right here in Quincy.
Oh, yeah, we made the
right
best.
Next door, right where our parking lot is now. So we'll talk about that. But I want to start, now that we've verified the fact that Freiberg's probably going to be too cheap to buy this pig purse for me. That's okay, Freiberg. I understand. Our friendship was, I thought it was deep and wide. But apparently $4,000 is above your spending limit for me. So I'll move on and bat my eyes at Chuck Schultz. But let's talk about the election. Quincy is going to have the first woman as mayor. Jack, you predicted it. You said it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Chuck, you were a little bit more reticent to make a prediction. How do you think? You're a former mayor. You've had these situations where it's election night. Am I going to make it? Am I not going to make it? You know,
it's changed so much, Mary. You know, everyone voted on election day.
Right.
So you had this massive get out the vote effort. All had to be organized to take place on election day. Now you have early voting, and you've got like a month to get that done.
Or to procrastinate and not get it done.
Here's the other thing. Election night. Only thing worse is maybe waiting for a jury. But the polls close at 7. We used to maybe get the first precinct around 9 o'clock or something. And I had said all along, if I could just see one precinct, I'll know I can tell the whole night. Doesn't matter where it's from. I'll know what it should look like for Linda. So nowadays what happens is Linda has a poll watcher in the precinct. They count the votes in the precinct and then post the totals on the door to the precinct, and then take the votes to the courthouse. So the precinct worker, the poll watcher, takes a picture on the door of the posted totals, texts it to us at 12th and Lynn at Utopia for our election eve get-together, and like 7:15, I get the first picture. And I know she's not only going to win, she's going to win big. It was from Trinity Church, 24th and Cherry. Those are not good precincts if you're not a Republican. Good Samaritan, Wilmar, God bless them. Very conservative area. So that picture came in. There's 4 precincts there. She carried all 4 precincts. I said, it's done. It's over. She won.
Wow.
And it was, 60-40 was pretty convincing.
A pretty convincing.
And the early votes that came in, which they count pretty quickly, too. Everybody that voted early, that was lopsided her way, too.
But those votes aren't counted before Election Day.
No, they're counted on Election Day.
They're counted on Election Day.
I just wanted to make people, because the way you said that, you were right, and I knew what you meant, but some people could construe that. Like, if I go
when
down there
and... When I was chairman of the Board of Elections, we had a problem in Champaign County with the clerk counted early. You cannot count until polls close.
Okay.
But they already have all those votes, so they're among the first counted.
Right. So... what is your reaction? An incumbent is beaten. It doesn't happen very often at all. It hasn't happened in Quincy. I mean, it's rare in Quincy. A woman is elected. I mean, these are kind of game-changing things. So post-analysis moving forward, does Linda Moore have a mandate or, and I've heard this, well, I didn't vote for her. I voted against him. Okay. Well, her is it now. So what are you going to do?
When you're an incumbent, it in essence becomes a referendum
a
on the incumbent.
You.
But Linda had to prove to be a credible alternative there. So, and I want to thank Mike for 4 years of service and trying his best. I'm really excited about Linda.
He did a lot for Quincy. He really did.
And this is historic. My little 8-year-old granddaughter, Amelia Wright Schultz, was with me that night. And I told her, you know, 100 years from now, God knows with medical science, she'll probably live to be 150. But she could say she was there that night.
And she could also maybe be another mayor of Quincy.
Wow.
Would you
Quincy.
Would you wish it? Let me ask you this. Having done it and knowing how it's changed, would you wish it on your family?
I would have a lot of hesitation because it is very, very different now with all the, you know, the problems with Facebook and so forth. Yeah. I didn't have to deal with that.
One of the things that I found interesting about this was in Bob Goff's kind of overall review of the election, he talked about that polling group that, rates counties based on how many points they are, Republican or Democrat or neutral or whatever. And Adams County was a plus 20 Republican, which I don't think surprised any of us.
No, I mean, we all know this, which is why Linda Moore ran as an independent and not a Democrat.
But I'm also saying that it also says to me that on these local elections, that party affiliation is not a strong correlation, and that a good candidate really trumps the party politics.
Candidate quality, and that's reassuring. And I would say this, Mary, she ran as an independent because she is an independent.
Yes.
And she is going to be a proponent of our moving to a nonpartisan form of government. Because
which I know you support.
Absolutely. There's nothing Democratic or Republican about doing a good job for whatever's right for Quincy.
However, you can have nonpartisan government and still be a mess. Look at Hannibal.
Well, and you can still be political. I mean, if you want to run as a Republican, go ahead. But I think it would increase our ability to recruit good people because a lot of people don't want to run for office. And, you know, we don't do that with the park board. We don't do that with the school board. So.
And another thing I think we need to comment on that, you know, that there was, what was it, Chuck, 2,700 votes in the Republican primary. Not very many.
But well, there were only 7,000 votes. The last time I ran, I got over 8,900 myself.
I know.
7,000 people total voted. Nora Baldner got more votes 4 years ago than Mike Troke got this time.
Yeah, it's, and the problem is, well, we know what the problem is. We care less and less and less. And yet, because we are the keyboard, hide behind our keyboards, we complain more and more and more. And I will say this. I thought that this year, between Mike Trope and Linda Moore, no matter who you were for, whoever won was a capable, competent person. Now, you may have thought they could have done, you know, the incumbent could have done more this, or the incumbent could have done more that, or maybe she had a weakness in a position. Maybe you thought that. But these two people, I think, were, I think we were going to be good either way.
I totally agree with that. That we had strong, competent people as candidates, and ultimately that's what we want for mayor, competent candidates.
But we got to be able to get along, and I think that's really what Linda had all the qualifications. She couldn't have got where she was if Linda Moore wasn't qualified to be the mayor.
We have a new mayor that's a PhD that's managed an entire division at ESPN. Yeah.
She's overqualified to be our mayor.
Well,
but here now the problem. She's going to have the same problem everybody has. You still got to get along with everybody. You got to bring everybody into the tent.
Well,
so we'll see how she does it.
She's meeting with all the aldermen, and she's reaching out.
That's one of the things that really at the heart of it is our form of government is and always has been strong council, weak mayor. And you need to be a coalition builder to get anything done.
The mayor doesn't really do that much, if the truth be known. However, they are an important figurehead. And if you're listening, Linda Moore, and if there's a paid position available in the city of Quincy that requires very little education or experience but pays an exhaustive salary, like maybe your personal assistant to make sure you always have a pencil and a pad, I'm available for that. And a six-figure salary would be, I think, commensurate with my capabilities.
Do you have a CDL? Because I think she could probably find a spot out at Central Services.
You know, did you hear? Did you see I had a car accident? Did you see my wound?
Mary.
Guess what I ran into?
I would have whipped a business card on you,
I know,
kid.
But you know what the problem is? I'd have to sue myself because guess what I ran into, Chuck?
Well,
I ran my car into my house.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
there
my God.
There probably are lawyers that would take that case, Mary.
I know one with very long feet. Okay, we're going to talk about that during the commercial break. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation. We're going to get to the bicentennial because these guys are dying
to
talk
about it. We
need
to plug this May 10th event. And also, it's April. It's Organ Donor Awareness Month. Please sign up as a donor. LifeGoesOn.com, Secretary of State's office. Do it with your health care power of attorney.
Absolutely. Make sure it's on your driver's
license.
You're
not going to need them after you die.
We'll be right back. We are back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Oh, if you could only hear what happened during the commercial break. Some of it, though, cannot be aired on FCC-regulated airwaves. Chuck Schultz, Jack Freiberger here, and let's talk about this big event Saturday, May 10th. And we're going to only talk a little while because I've got Mr. Seaman coming on, and we'll spend a whole Mary Griffith show. Dr. Seaman, we'll have spent a whole Mary Griffith show talking about
it. He is an amazing person.
He is an amazing person.
He has composed an original symphony, and it's in tribute to our heritage here. It's called The City of Refuge. And the Quincy Symphony will perform it on May 10th, and we really need to plug that. All the folks out there that support our wonderful symphony, this is going to be a once-in-a-lifetime deal. It, in conjunction with this, Mary, they're also doing a symposium at John Wood College. There's been other symposia done on this. You know, it's listed as one of the greatest humanitarian acts in American history. When I used to tell the school kids, if you extrapolate from, you know, 1,400 Quincyans take care of 5,000 refugees, that would be like 140,000 coming to Quincy. And how would we feed them? How would we house them and close them? Somehow they did that. John Wood organized this Democratic Relief Society, and everybody just opened up their homes and so forth. It's amazing.
Chuck, let's talk a little bit about the City of Refuge name for Quincy, because it not only applies to the Mormons, it also applies to the Potawatomi Indians, and it also applies to the Underground Railroad. So there's three significant groups there.
And Jack, I even think our immigrant ancestors, our German ancestors came here. They couldn't speak the language. They didn't have anything.
Well, and obviously there was a lot of them coming in the 1830s. But the point being is there's at least three, you know, four groups that came to Quincy. So this City of Refuge thing is not a one-shot deal. It's really a number of decades where it happened over in the 1830s through the 1860s.
And it was those founders, mainly Congregationalist Presbyterians, maybe a decade later the Catholics started coming, and the Catholics sheltered the Potawatomis at St. Boniface. But they set the tone. It was unusual for downstate Illinois. You know, most of downstate was people from Kentucky and the South, like Lincoln. But our founders came from New England, and they were anti-slavery. That's why they named us John Quincy Adams. That's why I always tell the school kids, our Main Street is different than every other Main Street in America, because we spell it with an E.
I had the kids through this week at the History Museum in a session with them. And I almost always tell those kids about Quincy's layout, because there was a guy by the name of Mike Knox, and he was with the insurance services office. And what his job was to go around the entire downstate Illinois and rate fire departments. So he was in every city and village in downstate Illinois. And he said to me, he said, Quincy is the best laid out of any city in the state. And he said, it's real simple. He said, all you've got to do is start at First Street, which is the river. And as you go east, you just count the number of blocks. So if you're on 48th Street, you're 48 blocks from the river. Then going north and south, there's only three things you need to know. The north side is trees. That's why we have locust and cherry and oak. He said the middle of the town is states. That's why we have Kentucky and Maine with an E and Hampshire. And he said the south side of the town is presidents. That's why we have Harrison, Jackson, Monroe. He said, that's simple. You really only need to know those three or four facts, and you can get around the entire city.
And I wish they had kept that, because anything past 24th Street...
These cul-de-sacs, and that's not good for plowing snow or
picking up
garbage.
I wish we had an Obama and a Trump Street, because it'd be so much easier to know I was going to the south side. You know
what's interesting?
Eucalyptus. I don't care what they name it. Just keep going with the theme.
There's 17 Quincy's in America. We're the only one named after John Quincy Adams.
Right. John Adams gets most of them. John Quincy Adams.
And also, the city of Quincy, Massachusetts... But we're named after John Quincy Adams, so in our street order, we start with Washington, but it's not Adams, it's Jefferson, and Adams comes between Monroe and Jackson, because it's for our sixth president, our town's namesake. So, yeah, we always got to think of John Quincy Adams, and we're going to do some bicentennial stuff, and Beth Young's talking about a symposium on the life of John Quincy Adams, who, is a fascinating character, America's greatest ex-president, after being defeated in 1828, goes back and runs for the House of Representatives as a former president, so 17 years fighting for the abolition of slavery. Amazing.
The city of refuge, and you both touched on it, it's the fact that these people came from New England, okay? They almost all had the same kind of culture. They came here from New England. They weren't Southerners. They were definitely upstate New Yorkers like John Wood. Okay, now... They invite other people, and they elect other people to come across. Yeah. So they didn't show disfavor to the Mormons. They didn't show disfavor to the Lutherans and the Catholics. Now, those groups may not have liked each other, but the Germans may have fought amongst themselves.
The Irish and the Germans or whatever.
But, Presbyterians said, you can all come in.
Western Illinois, and we were right at the hub of it, during the 1840s. When I was on the Lincoln Bicentennial Foundation, there were other guys on there, were mainly scholars, and one of them asked me one time, they saw my address at that time was on Vermont Street. He said, "You gotta tell you, oh, I said, Vermont, Jersey, we were founded by New Englanders." And he said, "There were three men that left upstate New York. You could throw a hat over where there was like within a 10-mile radius. They came to Western Illinois and they changed the world." And I said, "Okay, But the first one was Stephen Douglas, who basically drew the map of the Western United States. And, of course, there couldn't have been a Lincoln without Douglas. The second one was John Deere, revolutionized agriculture globally. And the third one, who perhaps has the most influence still today, Joseph Smith. Now, tomorrow night, for your listeners in Hancock County or anywhere around, I'm going to be giving a little talk in Carthage for the Hancock County Bicentennial, and it's on John Hay. John Hay grew up in Warsaw, the same time Mark Twain, little Sam Clemens, was growing up across the river. They became great friends, and they had both had great literary success. Mark Twain was a huge... John Hay was an amazing person who was Lincoln's personal secretary. He once said he signed 49 out of every 50 signatures that say A. Lincoln. He had it down to a science. But he slept across the hall from Lincoln. Lincoln would wake him up at 3 o'clock in the morning and start reading Shakespeare to him because he was an insomniac. So he was as close as anybody could be and helped write the Lincoln, definitive biography and papers. But he went on to become – he's married the daughter of the second richest man in America. So that kind of paved the way for the rest of his career. But he had tremendous literary success. And then he became America's foremost diplomat, spoke five languages fluently, and eventually ended up as the top post, the ambassador to the court of St. James in London. In those days, the ambassador had to pay for everything himself, and you had to put on the dog to compete with the czar and whomever, and he could do that. And then he became Secretary of State under McKinley and stayed under Teddy Roosevelt. He was the speak softly to Teddy Roosevelt's big stick. So we wouldn't have had a Panama Canal, Boxer Rebellion, international trade or what. He was probably the greatest diplomat in American history. And we have a boat ramp across from Hannibal, and that's it, named for John Hay. I think he's the greatest statesman to ever come out of Western Illinois.
He deserves more than
this
a phone.
This guy has honorary degrees from Harvard, Princeton, Yale.
Allie Lyman still has a wildlife area named after him.
This poor guy did all that and gets a boat ramp. It's underwater half the damn year anyway. Okay, so what time is that tomorrow?
7 o'clock tomorrow night at the Carthage Community Center. I'm looking forward to going back to my office and writing it right today,
so glad you're prepared.
I will be.
You will. Well, you could do it without notes.
I got
you guys
a couple.
Could
I could always tell a Jack Freiberg story.
That is so true. Speaking of the Jack Freiberg story, Jack, let's turn now to organ donation. This is Organ Donation Month. You both, these men here, have had their lives saved by the generosity of strangers who have given organs to them, or they wouldn't be here on the Mary Griffith Show. And anyone who knows anybody that has ever benefited from an organ transplant, you know how important it is. So, Jack, I'm going to give you the floor. Talk a little bit about why it's so important and how we can let our family know, let our our license thing, we can put it on our license. It's critical. It's not just enough to say, if I would go, I want, somebody to enjoy my liver or my kidneys or my lungs. We have to let that be known.
Well, first of all, I want to say that my upcoming Monday is my third kidneyversary, as we say. So it's the third anniversary of me receiving my kidney, which is miraculous because I'm doing very well. In fact, I'm doing so well that Dr. Goniker, my nephrologist here in town, I met with him a couple weeks ago, and he said, Jack, you're going to keep seeing Dr. Andrews, aren't you? And I said, sure. And you're going to go to Barnes once a year? And I said, sure. He said, you don't need to see me anymore. So
that's great, Jack.
That's fantastic. So, congratulations.
So that was terrific news. But obviously sign up through the Secretary of State's office on your driver's license, sign up for that. But I also want to say another thing about kidneys, in that kidneys, unlike a lot of organs, you can be a living donor and give a kidney to someone that needs one. And it's not a very complicated process, but before you're a living kidney donor, you're going to get the most extensive physical you've ever had in your life, where they check everything on you before they do that. My sister was going to do that. She was a perfect match for me. But as it got closer and closer and closer, she finally got a call from Barnes, the donation unit, that said, Mrs. Snyder, you get to keep your kidney. And which is a very positive way of saying you can't be a donor. That is an option, too. And if you have someone that whose GFR, which is a measure of kidney function, is dropping, all right, get yourself tested to see if you can, and you're willing to do that, get yourself tested to maybe be a donor for them. Because my quality of life is terrific compared to what it was in the 3 years that I was on dialysis. That is not a party you want to get invited to. And when you're there in dialysis, I was very lucky in that my kidney disease was just really, it was an autoimmune disease that attacked my kidney. Many of the people that are there on dialysis have other problems like lupus or severe diabetes or these other things, which are much more difficult to deal with because they affect a lot of organs besides your kidney. But anyway, it was a life-changing and without a doubt the most miraculous thing that's ever happened to me.
Well, as someone who just ventured to Poland a year ago with Jack, my husband and I and Jack and a whole bunch of other people were together, and Jack's vigor and stamina was unbelievable. And if you didn't know his story, you wouldn't know that 6 years ago it was quite a different story. So happy anniversary, happy third anniversary of getting your new kidney. And it changes your life around. And the other thing is, get that GFR function tested, because you don't really have symptoms until
it's
bad.
Often, it's often,
mine's 99, by the way. So I just had mine tested because I was curious. I know. Well, that's because I've never put anything impure in my body.
That's another story. But anyway, Anyway, it's often referred to as a silent killer because you can lose a lot of kidney function and have absolutely no sensation or any idea that you've had that. That's certainly something that, particularly as you get older, that needs to be tested every year to
see. What was your lowest GFR?
It was single digits. I don't remember.
Single digits. Wow.
I think it was down to 8 or 6.
Wow, that's amazing. I have somebody I know that has HIV/AIDS, and I don't know if it's on a scale of 1 to 100 or whatever, but this person was like at 6. And you should be dead, but somehow they live. So it is incredible. The human body wants to hang on, but
prevention is the key, and we all need to get tested for everything.
And one of the things that they told me when I first went on dialysis is how do you feel? Not so hot. Well, they said after a couple of weeks of dialysis, you're going to feel a lot better, and they were right.
And that's the struggle I have with some people I know now. They're considering whether to go on home dialysis, which is peritoneal dialysis, which really is very simple. You just do it at night while you're asleep. It doesn't take up a lot of your time, maybe an hour before you go to bed, an hour and you wake up in the morning.
My dad did that and extended his life a couple of years.
Yeah. So, we'll see. But the bottom line, folks, is this is organ and tissue donation. So whether you have corneas, whether you have liver, kidney, you can be a living donor sometimes. You can be, obviously, a deceased donor. Even your skin. I mean, everything you have that makes you a human being, some other human being might be able to use that. So the next time you're out at the Secretary of State's office getting your driver's license renewed, or if you're going to get real ID or whatever, make sure they put that sticker on there that says, I'm an organ donor, and talk to your family. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
Good plug there.
We are back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Always a pleasure when Chuck Schultz and Jack Freiberg go by. Earlier we were talking about the Mormon manufacturing cast iron pig, which I say could be converted to a purse. Freiberg's not so convinced, but they carried that around to sell their Mormon feed. Also from Quincy, the Quincy Showcase Works Company, which was at 311 and 313 Main Street, although it's spelled wrong, M-A-I-N.
Is it?
They didn't put the E on it. Quincy, Illinois, that's spelled correctly. My friend in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, found this when he was looking at the stuff in the case, and then he just noticed
people
all
will
roads lead
call
to Quincy.
In from what was it, Jack? At the Biltmore, people saw what is it, a stove in the Biltmore, Nashville, North Carolina, made in Quincy.
Quincy works there. And she was able to give us, when we were down there on one of our trips, she was able to give us a little bit more Quincy-centric touring.
There you go.
Everywhere you go, all roads lead to Quincy.
My first trip to our sister city of Hereford, I get interviewed by the local radio, Rolf, who was one of our great friends who visited Quincy many times. So I get behind the console, just like we're here today in your studio, and I look down and I say, oh, this was made in Quincy, Illinois. This is
all the
Harris
Broadcast.
Yeah. So we're everywhere.
We are everywhere. And this bicentennial year, folks, please do support everything you can. I was voluntold that I would get to read the responses of all the first, fourth, eighth, and seniors in high school who were surveyed about their favorite toy, their favorite book, their favorite movie.
Is this for the time capsule?
Yes. What do you want to be when you grow up? I've read them all. Now, this is unusual, but what kid wants to be a trash can at Walmart when he grows up? So we'll see what happens to him.
Wow.
What child's favorite food was cow heart? Not in the top 10 of anybody else. And my favorite is, of course, they don't put their names on them, so I don't know, but I think we can assume that this child belongs to the corporate executive. What do you want to be when you grow up? When I grow up, I will get up each morning and I will put on a business suit. I will go to the corporate office where I will sit and oversee logistics and communications and employee efficiency.
So with a fourth grader?
A fourth grader. I will work at the corporate office with the other members of my family. Then I will come home and take off my suit and have fun with my kids.
Oh, he is a fun guy after all.
I know.
Good.
And it was just great. And I was laughing because several kids did put, I want to be an entrepreneur. I want to be just like my dad. And then they would mention what their dad was. And so, you know, very amazing. I applaud you guys for all the work you've done on this. I applaud myself for this work I've done, whether I wanted to or not.
And it's going to have an impact a century from now. But that's pretty cool. I hope that dad got to see that. One of my treasured pictures is my son Jake, now my law partner, and he was about fourth grade. And for Halloween, when it's me, so he had a beard, had glasses, had a suit on, was carrying a briefcase. And there's a picture in my office of the two of us.
And that's fantastic.
That's heartwarming, Chuck.
You know, 200 years from now, what will Quincy look like? I know Arts Quincy is going to name their Dogwood King and Queen based on what people think. One little girl, she wins my vote. She says, 200 years from now, Quincy will be all pink. It will be a Barbie Quincy.
Everything will be Barbie Quincy. Some granddaughters that will be look forward to that.
The one that's going to be president or mayor someday will probably go over that. That'll be the first bill passed in her administration.
Oh, my
gosh. Folks, we are going to have Dr. Nathan Seaman on coming up, but mark your calendars for Saturday, May 10th.
Jack, tell them how they can buy tickets. You do it online, don't you?
And that's tickets for both the seminar and for the concert are $25, and you can find them at the Adams, what is it, co.org, or what is it?
AdamsCO.
Or is it 200AdamsCO.org website?
Look up Adams County, Illinois Bicentennial, and you'll find it.
Yep.
And there'll be a sign titled Mercy on the Mississippi depicting the story of Quincy as a city of refuge, and that will be dedicated that afternoon on May 10th.
Right, there'll be a marker at Clad Adams Park.
And I just found out another marker that's being put up. Dennis Cook came in the other day, and the Golden Eagle Color Guard is mentioned.
Yeah, I heard about that.
If you need an extra picture, I've got one of me with my wonderful uniform. But we've got to go. Have a great weekend. Happy Easter, everyone.
You guys were famous.
We were famous.
Thank you.